Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the weekend of March 29th and the week of March 30th. I'm John Gibson, and on a Friday night slash early Saturday morning, with me as usual is Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well, and I'm even, compared to you, I'm doing well on the dates. Normally, when people know me, they'd be like, Jim, it's Thursday. I'm going, what? You mean it's not Sunday? Hold on. That's the day after Saturday, right? Thursday's what, before Friday? Like, people know I'm like the worst person in the world for dates, times, and numbers. I show up at work sometimes and people are looking at me like, you're supposed to be here in like 4 hours? I'm going, oh, you mean it's not 3 o'clock? And they're going like, did you learn to tell time? What's wrong with your mother? You know, hey, leave my mother out of here.
Yeah, and I'm
on the phone calling, Mom.
So, as you might have heard, while Jim talks about other things, we have some new music here.
I want to
thank Jim Lapp for redoing the music. And he just, this guy, luckily, is a musician and he does music. And he just decided to redo the intro music for us.
I know.
So thank you very much, Jim.
Out of sight.
It's awesome. It sounds good. He put some horns in there. He's got cheer section horns in there, and it's just so much different and it's so cool. So well, let us know what you think about the new music.
Yeah, different is good.
Different is good. All right. On this week's show, we've got Hawks reliever Dennis Sarfate as the featured guest. We're going to discuss Shintaro Fujinami and his two teammates being the first of probably more players to test positive for coronavirus. We're going to talk about the developments of the impending MPB season and talk about some friendly high heat. So let's start swinging. So our old friend Dennis Sarfate, friend of the program, SoftBank closer, I called him on Wednesday morning and I had actually gone out over the weekend. This is a long story here. I went out on the weekend on Sunday this past week. Went out to Seibu Dome or MetLife or Prince MetLife and wanted to get the reaction. I had the story in mind was how are some of these foreign players dealing and coping with the coronavirus in this environment? And I wanted to talk to some new guys, wanted to talk to some veteran guys, wanted to talk to a guy who had been here more than 1 year and get their take on it. So I talked to a couple fighters, players, talked to Corey Spangenberg of the Lions. He's a newcomer. And then I headed off to Tokyo Dome, but I didn't get the chance to talk to the people I wanted to talk to there. So I was working on my story and wrote it up and didn't go to the office that day. We were going to, you know, just see what happened on Monday. And then on Monday, MPB came out with the announcement that it was going to cancel all the practice games. And so I had to add that to the story. And the Pacific League decided to cancel its games immediately, while the Central League decided to play two more days and then wrap up its practice schedule and concentrate on its target date of April 24th to start the season. And then on Tuesday, I think it was Tuesday night, the Olympics were canceled. And that threw a monkey wrench into my story because of the schedule. I think we had spoken about it before, the fact that NPB might be able to incorporate those Olympic break dates into a revised schedule. So I needed to get that into the story. And then on Wednesday, we finished the story, but we weren't able to get it into the paper. And so I ended up finishing it up on Thursday. We got it into Friday morning's paper. But on Thursday night, after I had finished everything, I saw Twitter and noticed that Shintaro Fujinami of the Tigers was going in for a coronavirus test. And by the time the paper hit the porches, so to speak, he had really a quick turnaround for that test and he had tested positive. So anyway, I talked to Dennis on Wednesday morning. This was after the Olympic cancellation. So Dennis has been battling to get back on the mound the past 2 years with a myriad of injuries. And he talks about the fact in this talk that his velocity is way down, but he said the pain level is also way, way down. So he's working his way back, and he thinks it's a little bit more mental since he's pain-free. And he might be able to push toward that 250th save in Japan. We'll see. We'll see. You'll hear what he says about that. He was kind enough to take time early in the morning. He says he gets up early anyway, so that's no problem. So let's listen to how he views the coronavirus delayed limbo season of 2020. Joining us for, I don't know how many times you've been on the show, but is Dennis Sarfate by phone, the Hawks reliever. How you doing, man? Good morning.
I'm good, man. How you doing?
Hey, couldn't be better. Couldn't be better. So let's get right to it. I guess as a foreign player in Japan, how have you really been dealing with this whole coronavirus situation?
I think you just got to take it day by day. I'm not a fear monger, so I'm not good with what they're doing, how they've caused panic across the world. I know it's a serious thing, and I think you have to take the guidelines of washing hands and distancing and all that. I do believe that there is going to be economic suffering after this for all over the world, and I think Japan is probably trying to do the most they can to hold off that economic crisis stuff. But, you know, being the hardest part is being apart from my wife and my girls, and we've had a couple of setbacks where they were supposed to get here and something happened with their visas from the team, and so it was three cancellations. Now they're set to come April 16th, and I was thinking about going home. There's been so much emotion, you know, over the last month and a half of the unknown. And I think that sometimes can really put a damper on a whole lot of things.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, Ernesto Mejia told me the other day, it's not just about anything in particular. This is life. This is health. You know, this is different. So, I know it's been emotional. It hasn't been so much for maybe the everyday guy, but, you know, some places in Japan have been impacted already. So, and we're facing a lockdown perhaps. So, now you guys, as players, you had been playing these practice games amid, I would call a drawback of public activity. I don't think there has been any lockdown, but
No.
Certainly in Tokyo, we have a much higher risk than in other parts of the country. But how has your approach been to this whole practice game situation amid the coronavirus?
You know, for me, it's huge because I missed 2 years. And so I'm using this time as wisely as I can to prepare myself, my body, get stronger. So it benefits me, even though the circumstances are a terrible thing, and I don't wish this on anyone. It benefits me not having the fans there. You know, this whole thing, I don't blame the league, but to have us traveling, and I was very vocal on Twitter about this, to have us traveling to play games that are meaningless, knowing that we weren't going to start April 10th. I think everyone knew that we weren't going to start April 10th.
Right.
But to have us travel all over the country to go and have people that live in Tokyo come to Fukuoka and us to go somewhere else, I mean, you're just asking for trouble. You're asking to spread this virus everywhere. And to me, baseball is not that important.
Right.
I wish the league would have did a better job of not stringing us along. I feel like, okay, it's going to be delayed. And, oh, it's now April 10th. And then we get to there, and, oh, it's going to be delayed again, April 24th. I'm pretty sure we're not going to start April 24th either.
Target date.
I think that's, you know, the one thing that I think that they could have took some leeway from was from the MLB. They said, hey, we're not starting. It's suspended indefinitely. And don't give a time. That way you can just say, hey, listen, it's not going to be before May. And so let's maybe send some foreigners home. I mean, even if you have your wife and kids here, you have family back home that you might be worried about. And anytime there's a global crisis, I feel like sports in general, the last thing on anyone's mind. Now, is it giving comfort to people that are locked down at home or the elderly that are at their house and they're getting to watch baseball games on TV? Yeah, great. But at the same time, you're putting people in jeopardy of travel. I talked to a pilot the other day that said, his flight from Tokyo to Naha, Naha to Fukuoka was full both ways.
Yeah.
And to me, that's so irresponsible. I don't think you should shut down the economy, but I think there should be some guidelines that you follow. Unnecessary travel would be one. And I know that playing a practice game is unnecessary travel. I just feel like we could have stayed in our own cities. And they made the right choice of canceling. Now, I don't know why they canceled those games, these three games in Osaka, but I think it was a smart choice. And I think they're, I think Japan's starting to see a spike in their cases, and who knows the truth of the reporting, but it's a serious thing for the public. You know, I'm not worried about it, but I know there's a lot of elderly people in Japan, and they should be worried about it, and we should worry about them.
Correct, correct. So has the team, for example, instructed you on, you know, how to restrict your movements, or instructed you about a contact with other people or self-isolation or anything like that?
None whatsoever. They take our temperature. Obviously, if you're feeling any kind of thing, they'll ask you how you're feeling, whatever. But it's been like, it's almost like if you just put baseball in and took everything else out, it's like it's business. We're just ready to go, and we keep practicing, and there's been no telling me I can't go out to dinner here, and I do. I go out to dinner in Fukuoka with some of the guys, and, you know, is that irresponsible? I don't know, because I'm not getting the truth of how bad it is here.
Right. Well, how do you keep up on the reports and the situation here in Japan? Because you can read stuff about the States, but that doesn't give you the local.
I got a website. It's arcgis.com. It's ARCGIS.com. It gives you a full map of the globe, and you can click on any country. It'll tell you how many cases there are, the death rate, all of that. So I'm keeping I've been watching that. Japan's was at about 200 about a week and a half ago. On this right now, it's showing 1,193. And I would, if I was a betting man, I would say it's probably quadruple that number. Just because no one knows.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, how much it is. But I also look at all the data, and a lot of the data doesn't show the panic like the U.S. is going through. October 1st to February 1st of, you know, of 19 to February 1st of 20, 16,000 Americans died from the influenza.
Right.
435,000 were infected. You know, those are true numbers. They're facts. We're not there yet with these numbers, and who knows how much it's going to grow and how it's going to continue. But I feel like you can put fear and panic into an economy and into the world and people, and you get craziness. And I think the best thing is to remain calm. All right, protect yourself, wash your hands, do everything that people are telling you to do.
Right.
And cancel things. Don't have concerts. I heard they're about to open amusement parks again in Japan, and I think that's a mistake. I don't think they should start school on time. I think that's a mistake. You just really got to be smart, and it's not forever. I would say postpone school for 3 weeks and just see by the end of April how it looks.
Right, right.
I just think you want to get ahead of this. You don't want to get caught up like Italy. And all of a sudden, you're having 900 to 1,000 people die a day.
Right, you don't want to be chasing. So we've got now the report late last night that broke was that the Olympics are going to be pushed back a year, and so that time that the Olympic break was going to impact MPB can be used to make up time to reset the schedule, so to speak. So, what's your take on that?
Yeah, this is going to be a season to remember. I'm kind of similar to like the Fukushima deal and the earthquake in 2011, you know, where the season started late and it ended late. With that time now, we get to make up some games during that period. I still think, depending on when we start, if we start in May, it's a whole lot of games we're missing, you know. And so I don't know how many you're going to be able to make up. I do believe they're going to have to shorten the season by so many games.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know it hurts the owners. I get it. This is a business. They want to make money. They're paying players. They're paying for all this stuff. They want to make money. But you're going to have to shorten the games. I think no All-Star game was already been discussed. I don't know if it's been decided. And then the postseason, I think it should just go down to a Japan series this year. It should just be winner of the league on both sides play, and that's it. So what's going to happen, John, I think what you're going to see is we're not stopping right now, right? We have guys throwing and throwing. And so what you're going to have is guys have 60 innings. The starters have 60 innings before the season starts, and then you're going to try and play a full season. You're going to see a tick up in injuries. You're going to have guys have never done this before.
Right.
And by the end of the year, if they're at, you know, pushing way past their innings total and just playing into late November, it's dangerous because now it's not only going to affect this year, it's going to affect next year. And when you get to spring training, you're going to be exhausted. So they need to use those days for sure. If the Olympics are pushed back, which is a good idea, I don't think anyone wants to be having an Olympics from all these countries gathering. I feel like that's a really logical decision that they made, pushing it back a year. is definitely a good decision. It helps us in the MPB, but I still think you have to look overall, is this benefiting the players to put in 143 games still? Right. And I just don't see that as being a good move.
Right. Okay. Excellent. Now you touched on it earlier about you missing effectively 2 years, and you just like I do, I told people, you know, I don't get over an injury. I just learn how to manage it, and I collect them like, you know, a little kid picking up flowers in the meadow. So you're coming off this long situation where you haven't thrown a lot, and we know your velocity is a little bit down. So what does this whole pushing back the season and this extended break do for you personally?
Well, yeah, because I'm sitting on, I started playing catch in December, and I had 9 months of no throwing, pretty much.
Nine months?
Yeah, so I'm definitely getting stronger. My arm strength is getting there. I'm probably like what I would feel like in January right now.
Okay.
You know, it's a thing where I thought about retirement all the way up until November. Wow. I just wasn't getting better. It was miserable. And then they figured out it was my psoas muscle, this little muscle that you really need for a whole lot of reasons. And was able to address it. Now I'm still dealing with some soreness and tightness, range of motion, but I'm able to pitch. I'm able to walk and run and do stuff now. It's helped me a ton. I don't think I wouldn't have been ready for the start of the season, even though I'm pitching in games. Mm-hmm. I mean, to say my velocity is down a little bit would be an understatement. you know, I think I was happy the other day hitting 145, which is a big step for me, but it's pain free. So that's the biggest thing, is I'm pitching pain free now. And now it's about, my mechanics are off. Everything's off. I'm trying to fix it all, watching a lot of video. The team's been great about getting still shots. So I've really used this time wisely. I go in on off days, I train, but then that also, you know, I'm 39, so I got to be smart, because I'm, you know, I start getting where I've been rehabbing for, geez, 2 years, but I never got an off season this last year. I went straight from spring training all the way through to where I am now, and it's been an up and down battle, but there's definitely days where I'm more fatigued. So this break kind of helps me, and hopefully by the time we do start, I'll be strong and ready to go.
All right. So yeah, we know that 250 save mark is right there for you. How do you feel about that as well?
You know, there's always so much talk about that, and I'm kind of over it. If I don't ever close another game, then so be it. I think it would just be a bonus just to pitch in a game. I think from where I was last year, I thought I would never throw again.
Wow.
So every time I go into these games, it's an emotional thing, but it's also a step in the right direction. It's like a check mark off the list. And now it's like, instead of talking about, hey, how do you feel? It's like, okay, well, next time let's try to get 146, and after that let's try to get 147, and I think I'll start to see that as I throw more and get stronger, and trust that I'm not hurt. And I think a lot of it's mental, but yeah, you know, the saves thing, it was so close. Everyone talked about it in 17, like, oh, next year you're gonna get it. And if I don't get it, I've told them before that it's not going to define my career. It's just, you know, it happens. Guys get hurt and they don't get to accomplish all their goals. But I've done a lot. I've been proud of a lot of what I've done on the field, a lot that I've done off the field to help, you know, certain situations that have gone on in Japan. So overall, I'm pretty happy with my career here. If it ended today, I wouldn't regret it. I wouldn't even think about the 250.
Well, at 39, I still consider you a young pup, so I think you can get over it, and I'm looking forward to seeing you back out there. Thanks so much for taking the time with us this morning. I know you're busy. You must appreciate it. Stay safe and stay healthy.
All right. Same to you guys. Be careful out there.
We will. Thanks a lot, bud.
All right. Thanks, John.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you very much, Dennis. Always, always a pleasure, whether it's in person or on the phone. He's got so much personality. So there's too much to unpack all of that. But what outside of the schedule-related remarks stood out for you?
Well, I guess the one, it seems like it's not every time that I have a talk with Dennis. There's something about, I thought about retiring. You know, when he was the Pacific League MVP in 2017, and he said three times during that season, because of his wife has Lyme disease, And he said it three times in that during that season. It was so painful for him being in Japan with his his wife suffering back home and unable to come to Japan, that he went to the park prepared to tell the team he was leaving.
Mm.
But he didn't. It was a great story. And since he said, I thought about retiring in November, you know, until November, he was thinking about retiring. That was interesting to me because I know he's been there before, and he's had a really, for somebody who's had as much success as he has found in Japan, mm-hmm. he's had a lot of hard times. And so it was kind of like, oh, come on, one more time. You know, it's like here he is going, you know, it's like right after he was the MVP, he got a huge contract.
Yes.
To stay with SoftBank.
And I think at that point he was thinking about.
Yeah, he was going to go to the States. He wanted to go to the majors. He wanted to finish in the majors. That was one of his options. And Scott Matheson with the Giants was in the same boat. He was thinking, I'm going to go to the majors, but both the Yomiuri Giants made Scott and the SoftBank Hawks made Dennis these huge contract offers to come back. And then they both ended up getting hurt, which is nothing to do with the other, but it's just unfortunate. And I'm still worried about him.
As you know, we talked about on the Pacific League prediction show about, you know, I said, he looked comfortable, and I guess that's about what he said. You know, he felt pain-free, and I thought his mechanics looked fun. They looked normal to me, but I'm not a student of Dennis's mechanics. I don't even know where he takes his car. Exactly. That's not even my worst joke of the day.
and that bump-a-dump-bump was over a pot. Bump-a-dump-bump.
So anyway, you know, so he was throwing, he was hitting around 143. I think that was his maximum velocity, 143 kilometers per hour. And his average fastball velocity, according to Delta Graphs in 2017, was 153. So I said he was a little down, and so I was happy when he says, it's a nice to say a little. It's polite. It's euphemistic. So, yeah, he's there. But the other thing, of course, that was interesting was his talking about training and the cost of having, you know, his thoughts about the cost of a long preseason. Nobody really knows what the, you know, is it the players are going to be burned out at the end? I don't know. But if you shut them down, then they have to work back up. And is it the same? And I don't know. And is it, you know, all these things we don't know. Exactly. It's the great unknown. It's like the greatest unknown for baseball. So how about you?
Well, yeah. You know, he's a grizzled veteran. And he actually told me that a lot of guys around the league, I shouldn't say a lot, but a number of guys around the league were calling him for guidance in terms of what to do. And this is, I wish I had talked to him about that before I wrote most of my story, because that would have been a good nugget to put into the story, that guys were asking him what should they do. Because obviously he said in the chat, look, he had situations where he really wanted to go home. And, you know, he's got issues there. And then his family, he's got three girls and his wife, and they were trying to get out here, and they had visas canceled and all that stuff. So that's an emotional tug at the heartstrings there. That's huge, right? And I often talk about the off the field issues that can occupy a player's time when he might be doing something else, maybe perhaps doing some studying and looking at some of those numbers and looking at some of that data. But he has to devote the time to other things. And so that hit me. That put a lot of things into perspective and gets you a clearer understanding of why he might have considered packing it up and going home and all that stuff. And he turns 39 on April 9th, so he's not quite there yet. But you really put things into perspective. And I teased him saying he's a young pup, but at, you know, my 39-year-old body wasn't so much in pain as it is now. And so obviously I haven't gone through all the rigors of playing baseball and all that stuff, but I put a lot of miles out there in my 20 years of distance running here. This is my 20th year of, you know, beyond half marathon distance running. So I got some stuff on me, but nothing like surgeries and all that stuff. So you can really get a perspective. And then, you know, he talked about the 250 save milestone, and you know, I'm not the kind of guy who thinks you can just put anybody back there in the ninth inning or whatever inning it is late in the game and get the last three outs of a game. But when you talk to Dennis and you hear him, you get a sense of why he has been such a clutch closer here in NPB, because you truly get a sense of him being the moments not being too big for mm-hmm. him. And, you know, nothing is too big and no minute detail gets overlooked at the same time. He's calm. He has a plan. He believes it'll work, or he believes whatever adjustment he makes can work. Mm. And I think that's part of closing games. When you don't have something going, or you know the opponents are looking for something in a specific zone, you're able to make the adjustment and able to make the pitch and make it work. And you can see that he can be on a freeway and still be driving down the road at X, you know, miles an hour and still thread a needle, because he can concentrate on different things.
I'm going to skip that experiment. I think throwing baseballs,
I thought you would like that.
Threading needles are different things. So,
yeah, but I mean, you know, I just think he can multitask that way. Mm. I mean, he can process what's going on with opponents and process what's going on with himself, and then figure out the situation and then just deal with it.
Well,
whereas some guys might get rattled by one thing or another and not be able to make the pitch they want to make. And I mean, sometimes I said thread a needle, because sometimes when a pitcher is throwing, he's trying to hit a very, very specific spot.
Yeah,
threading a needle. So
caught that.
You got that, but you didn't. You crashed.
No,
you crashed trying to understand that thing.
I thought, but
you ran off the road,
because the other analogy also worked. So, but since you were mixing your metaphors, it was a little hard to tell whether you were trying to mix them or you were actually, you know. What you meant was either literal or a metaphor. So that was the challenge. But yeah, to put a lens or a focus on what you said, you know, uh-huh. we've talked a lot about the things he does to prepare, not to prepare, but to really to slow things down and get to be mentally where he wants to be in the game, which is mostly keeping everything, getting all the thought processes out of the way that he doesn't need for mm-hmm. that thing. And he talks about stay back, stay back, stay back, not rush, not get too far forward. And I've asked two or three different Hawks pitchers if they've learned anything from him. And Yui Tomori said, you know, that's what he's helped me with. And Shuto Ishikawa said the same thing. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, finding the thing you need to remind yourself to, you know, to flush all that extra stuff out of the way and focus on something right. that'll kind of a mantra or a key that will sort of allow your body to do what it's trained to do without the intrusion of all the other things. And I'm not in the same school that says, oh, pitching in the ninth inning is some sort of holy grail that some people can do and some people can't. I'm not in that respect, that it in itself is a special skill, but it does require it does require certain things. To be consistent at it, you have to be really good at wiping out failure. You have to be really good ignoring stuff that you can't control. I mean, you have to be hyper good at it. So I don't think it's a ninth inning, oh, it's a thing on the line. You know, this guy's some kind of a, you know, he's got a superhero, you know, he's got a superpower, but he does in a sense in self-control and some things. And some of these things are learned and some of them are, you know, some people have them when they grow up and they all develop and work on them and people have them at different levels. So,
sure.
I think there's very few people I think who couldn't learn to do it. But having said that, there's not everybody's used to doing it. I think there are people you could just take off a bus because they're good at doing those things and they would quickly adapt to it. And that goes in the, that goes, flies in the face of the one, well, you want, you know, the one that I hear so often, which is, oh, you want the guy who's been there and done that. Well, that guy who's been there and done that wasn't always in the case where he'd been there and done that. He had to learn and develop and hone those skills too. And some people are quicker at it than others. So, yeah.
Sure.
So that's where I stand on that. It's not really, I'm not opposed to the people who say that, but I think of it in a little different way. Anyway, moving along. Yes. Yeah. So he does have that. And I think, as we've seen, Yuito Mori is really good at that, relatively speaking. Considering his stuff, I think he's exceptionally good at it.
Right. And I think, again, I mean, you mentioned it can be an acquired talent. And I think being with a guy like Dennis, who, when the manager, I think, gives Dennis the ball, they do it with confidence.
Oh, sure.
And knowledge that the plan, you know, like I said, if the plan is not working, that he can make the adjustments on the fly. Whereas I think Mori just had to learn that he couldn't just sit back and throw fastballs.
Yeah.
And that he had to work his secondary pitches, and he had to be able to locate them very precisely. And I think that's what he has done, because I, you know, at first I remember him when he came up, he was just pumping fastballs left and right, and yeah, he spotted them fairly well, but eventually these guys in Japan are going to find it, you know. But he was able to throw other pitches and spot them.
Yeah, there's
well.
A lot of things that go into it, and you know, and of course the stuff does go into it too. But I think it's a lot of it is knowing that the person is less likely, you know, I mean, everybody has bad days too. And, you know, even the best pitchers have days when they can't execute, or for some reason or another, that inner calm is just deserting them. And I think when you want the guy, you know, the guy who is consistent at that for a long time has had success there, and they're just more, you know, you feel they're more likely to be calm in that situation. They're more likely to be able to, you know, they're not going to miss a pitch because they're panicking. They'll miss a pitch because, you know, they didn't grip it properly, or, you know, some, you know, it's a normal human error crept into it. I mean, even mm-hmm. Mariano Rivera gave up runs sometimes in critical games, as people have been talking about the last couple of days. So, in the World Series. So,
right. I've said it before, if you throw the ball over the plate, sometimes it has a tendency to get hit.
Yes, it does. And so anyway, so yeah, that is interesting, and I am always interested. And I do agree, certainly agree with you 100% about the effect he has on his teammates, because they all look up to him a great deal.
As they should. All right. Well, we appreciate it, Dennis. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's good, and you know, whether you believe him or you follow his philosophies or not, he says it with such confidence and such. He just comes from a place of knowledge. It seems like he knows what he's talking about. He did say stuff about the virus that you might not agree with, but he says it with such conviction that you know he believes it, and. I just hope, yeah, we're going to talk about the coronavirus and its impact on the schedule and on the season here as we transition. But Yeah, I don't think there's. I don't think you can say enough about it. On my side, I think from where I stand, I think we can do more. And we're in we call what a soft lockdown in Tokyo right now. Is that what you? I mean, I would call it a tie down.
It's a stay.
It's a puppy training.
It's exactly like that, and. The governor of Tokyo is holding a rolled up newspaper and telling people to stay and don't go to the park and be having any more hanamis like people did last week when they were asked not to.
Right. Don't go out and look at the cherry blossoms. So, you know, we experienced a week like no other in Japan as far as NPB, as far as sports, as far as life, as far as the Olympics. I cannot impress upon everyone enough how difficult it was to make this decision, and that this Olympic postponement didn't come easily. But you know, we got that news I think on Tuesday night, and sure, it's going to impact NPB, and let's talk about that scheduling thing now. You know, Dennis even talked about it in his talk, saying that. Obviously, you can incorporate those days that they had scheduled for the Olympic break. And I did talk to a bunch of people. Like I said, I did talk to the Lions guys. I talked to Ernesto Mejia on Sunday as well, this past Sunday. And he said, hey, look, he'd be up for doubleheaders to try to get the games in.
That ain't going to happen.
I'm wondering what you're thinking in terms of if now that we have Shintaro Fujinami and two of his teammates testing positive, and that was kind of weird because neither one of those guys, or I'm sorry, Fujinami himself didn't have a fever, didn't have a cough, he presented no other real symptoms, but he lost his sense of taste and smell, and no breathing issues or anything. And I'm not sure about the other two, Hayata Ito.
Yes, diminished sense of smell and taste. Of course, taste tends to come with a lack of smell. Yes, and actually that's last week I mentioned about all the you have to have the prescribed symptoms in order to be tested in Japan, unless you're a sumo wrestler or a baseball player, apparently.
And apparently, if you're a baseball player, you can get those results back in less than 24 hours.
Snap your fingers and things happen. So all you people in New York, lined up dying in line to get tested, come to Japan and be baseball players, and then your troubles will be over. Okay, so the...
troubles will just be beginning, perhaps.
Especially if you're playing for the Tigers. But that's...
Whoa.
It could have been worse. I could have been meaner and said the Swallows, but people would have been... That would have hurt. That would have hurt too much.
Hashtag hi.
Okay. So anyway, the... what I'm getting at is that they have the symptoms you mentioned. High fever, difficulty breathing, or... coughing, and if you have those for 4 days, okay, so I explained the process last week. I'm not going to reinvent it, but there are other new ones. Diarrhea is one, stomach cramps is another, and a third is a lack of losing your sense of smell. And so that was the one Fujinami told one of the trainers about a week ago. And then I'm sure he was probably looking online and saying, oh, losing your sense of smell is one of the symptoms that Japan doesn't tell you about. But it is on the internet information you can get about the coronavirus. And so they took him to the doctor because of the lack of smell. And then they found out two other of his teammates lacked a sense of smell. So they bundled them off to doctors. They're all in the hospital now. They're all been hospitalized, but still have no fever or coughing.
Yeah, and I suspect we're going to hear more players now, and that comes back to what Dennis was talking about in terms of playing these practice games. If they really wanted to, perhaps something like a self-quarantine, they could have. You know, what I propose, and maybe they might do, is just pick one location and put teams there and try to play games at one location, keep all the guys in the same spot, and maybe more of a controlled environment. But they weren't doing that. They were traveling around. And I, like I said, I suspect before we even post this that we're going to hear about teams that came in contact with the Tigers. And, you know, I went out, like I said, on Sunday when I went to the Sabre Dome. The guys on opposite teams, you know how they usually, if some guys played at the same college or the same mm-hmm. high school or something, or used to be teammates, they always come over and shake hands and say hi and meet. And so I didn't see any of that taking place, but I keep seeing the players, you know, and I don't know if I'm sensitized now, because when I'm watching a movie or something, some TV show, and I see people have contact, I'm like, no, that's dangerous. Don't do
that. You're the robot and from I'm like, Lost wait a minute, this in is... Space now.
Yeah, this is danger, Will Robinson. this movie was filmed in 2000. It was safe then, you know. Don't worry about it, John, but I'm just sensitized to it now. And I see the players, you know, flash back or back to the present, and I see players hitting home runs and high-fiving, thinking, no, you shouldn't be interacting like that. But I don't know. That was some of my questioning to some of the players. How has the team really worked with you and talked to you and changed the way you behave? And I didn't hear a lot of that. Just everything's been business as usual. They just take the mm-hmm. temperatures. They tell us don't interact with too many people, and that's about it. But I mean, you know, your teammates can be other people, so
depending on your on the team, yeah.
Right. So I don't know where we are. I was going to ask you, my question that I was going to pose to you tonight was probably this: the NPB was targeting April 24th to try to get
this going,
and my question before this Fujinami situation that I wrote in my notes was, what if one player has a positive test for coronavirus in, let's say, September, in October, in the middle of the playoffs, in the Japan series? What is the protocol? What do they do?
Yeah, I don't know. But I'm guessing that they're beginning to work out plans for that, because on March 18th, they established a protocol for what happened if somebody is tested, which is the team must announce it. Okay. And then...
Which is a good start.
Which is a good start. So I'm guessing that they're moving in that direction. But what I want to get to is April 24th, because they didn't just say, you know, I want to talk about the planning, or maybe the over-planning that went into deciding April 24th is a good day to start the season. And let me just say bluntly, nobody looked at the coronavirus numbers or talked to health officials and said April 24th should be a good time from a safety standpoint to start the season. I'm just going to say it bluntly. I don't know this for a fact, but I'm going to say my opinion. Nobody gave a hoot about it was a safe time or an opportune time. That did not end. What entered into the thinking was on March 13th, the day they announced that the season would be delayed, they also said our alternate date to start the season, and here's the number, 143, 143 mm-hmm. games, is April 24th. So magically, when they delayed the season, for safety's sake, let's do it April 24th. Safety, you know, to paraphrase Mae West, safety's got nothing to do with it. It's all about playing games, and the teams are not interested in playing without fans, which means they think it's, you know, they're doing a little, you know, I'm not trying to be mean, but when Donald Trump says everything's going to be good enough to restart the country's economy by April 12th on Easter, that's what NPB's doing. We think it's a good, it's a suitable window for us to, you know, it's almost like we've had enough grieving over people's concerns over the health. We need to play baseball games that put money in our pockets. And we're sorry if that sounds callous, but you're not paying the bills. So that's NPB's attitude. I mean, I know they're not that callous, but they are not. I'm sure they are not that callous. I'm exaggerating, but they are acting that callously.
I agree, and I mean, it didn't seem like it came from a place of well thought out, well planned.
Well, it was well planned out according to their season projection for their calculations for the season schedule.
Well, that didn't come from a place of reality.
No, it didn't come from anything to do with the coronavirus. Although, I spoke with my colleagues today, and we discussed this briefly. The people who run the baseball desk at my office, my company, they said basically. He said, basically, the teams don't really think they're going to start on April 24th. They're all aiming for it. The commissioner said, we're going to do our best. But when the commissioner says we're going to do our best, it means it's a microcosm of the Olympics. We're going to have the Olympics on July 24th until we're going to have them next year. And it was like 100% certain that the head of the IOC said 3 days before he said they have to be postponed, said they have to take place on July 24th. And that was also another a thing that was kind of interesting. But I'm not going to get into that here. You can read my website and see me gush about that stuff.
Right. So my new question for you was going to be, I mean, I'm thinking they could make a season out of 90 games.
Sure, they
or
could.
100 games, somewhere around.
Sure, they could
there.
Play a 70 and, game season if they wanted. You know, whatever.
Yeah, and I really like Dennis's idea of just, hey, let's skip the climax, or maybe one round of the climax, but just skip the climax and go to the Japan series right after.
This is a year of crisis. You know, this is about.
Exactly.
And I think his observation about 2011. Was very astute. You know, this is much like 2011. This is a year of crisis, and it's not, and no one's going to, and this is, and if people remember how it went at the start of before the 2011 season, the Central League, whose stadiums were 100% intact after the earthquake, and the Pacific League, two of the Pacific League stadiums were not able to function on the scheduled opening day. Sendai's and Chiba's for different reasons, but related to the earthquake. And the Central League was saying, our stadiums aren't broken, we're going to start as scheduled. And it came off as being exactly the way this one comes off as being, all about us and basically fans, we feel your pain, now go get lost and leave us right. to play our games.
Well, yeah, I like what you wrote. I don't know if you wrote it in the blog post or just on the Twitter post that you used, but you said Disneyland is closed, but Fantasyland is
oh, man.
Running.
Yeah. So here's the same one. This is how they're doing. And what the owners, I think they understood later on, that when you're in an emergency, it's not about how you manage. It's not 100% about how you successfully execute a business plan. It's about how you achieve, how you get through the crisis in the best possible way, which isn't always about money. It's about how you incorporate, you know, the community. And right now, NPB is kind of missing the point, I think.
Yeah, and I saw some story that was talking about them starting the season and limiting the number of fans, but they wanted to have
right.
fans in the stadium, and then they were going to limit the number of older senior
right, and take everybody's temperature, the J-League has said the J-League is going to sell 50% of their tickets.
That's the soccer league.
Correct,
in Japan,
the
yes.
professional soccer establishment. They're going to sell 50% of their tickets, and they're going to bar visiting fans. In the idea being to keep people from traveling to the games and spreading whatever they catch there throughout the country.
Right.
But I say they're the J League is now, I believe, looking at May 9th to start their season.
Yeah, I mean, every aspect of, and again, you know, Dennis said it, I think I said it the previous week, is that the first things that get jettisoned are the luxuries and the,
yep,
the frivolous. And I would put sports in there, except they've become such a deep part of the fabric of culture. Mm. And there's a lot of business that's involved with sports now, that it goes beyond the sports, the scope of the sport itself. Yeah. And so we've got these economic issues with, you know, the people who make money. In fact, I have a friend who he's got a food truck, and he commented on, I think it was either Facebook or Twitter, saying, well, now the Olympics are pushed back, there goes a bunch of business that I had anticipated, mm-hmm. because he had already applied to get certain mm-hmm. spots where they were going to have food right. trucks, and he got the okay, so he was looking forward sure. to that. So that's
no, that is big, and I don't want to make light of that. But they do have to think about more than themselves, and I get the feeling that the funny, you know, the thing about the Olympics was the thinking. As soon as the Olympics were called off, and the whole process, which was so funny because Japan made it sound like the prime minister's decision, when in fact it was basically they told him this is how it's going to be, and then he said, oh, can I ask you to save face, and they said sure. So but the whole point was Japan, in my opinion, had been suppressing or ignoring the crisis, and not even soft pedaling it, but basically saying it's going to be under control. It's going to be under control. It's
they're treating it like golf. You know, oh, there's a problem on this hill. We'll just play through.
Kind of a little bit.
We'll go to the next one.
What Dennis said was, I think, and I think there's some wisdom in that, is don't panic. Rule number one is don't panic. Nobody's advocating panicking. But measures like closing, you know, isolating pockets of people with infections and limiting travel so that you can attack clusters of infections and basically eradicate the virus is really something that could have been done early, except Japan didn't want to be seen as a country with a coronavirus problem that would keep it from having the Olympics. The day the Olympics were postponed, the governor of Tokyo said, well, you know, if this problem gets worse, we're going to have a lockdown.
When did that getting sick on us and costing us all this
days,
money?
3 days before, she'd said Tokyo's going to be fine and we're going to hold the Olympics, and you can just take that and take your... take your postponement cancellation talk and put it where it'll do the most good, because we're fine. And then the day they were canceled, she said, no, we've got to address this serious issue that wasn't serious 48 hours earlier.
Well, as I said before, when this whole coronavirus thing started, the more they test, the more they're going to find, because they're actually looking for it now. So I see a lot of scenarios and possibilities, and I see maybe staffers of NPB, coaches, sure. because these guys do a lot of work and have a lot of hands-on contact with the players. And I think we're going to hear more about it, and possibly before we even post this show. Mm. But, I want to mm-hmm. move along. They had these practice games. I was watching them. They were interesting. It was having baseball. It was almost like having baseball, except they didn't. They didn't have stats on it. There were no winning pitchers, no losing pitchers, and all
everything
that stuff.
Was very vague.
And no batting averages for the guys who were doing well or anything. It was just they were just playing these games. And again, I was with Dennis. What's the point of traveling all over the place and doing this when these things don't count? When you don't have a target in mind. So I think that was smart to try to get a target date, but that's going to get moved back now. And the other impact that Dennis talked about was all these guys who were throwing, and it wasn't all the top pitchers or anyone we would always we would equate with being an ace level, although I did see Sugano throw in Nagoya against the Dragons on, it must have been Tuesday, so he threw that first game. But, you know, and him, Dennis talking about the fact that it could impact next season, I think that's huge. Then you got another Olympic break that they have to work into the NPB season next year. It's very impactful to do this with the Olympics, but I think it was necessary, and I'm leaning toward the reality that there might not be a baseball season this year. It's very unfortunate, but that's what I'm seeing develop here, because it only takes now, what, we've got one team isolated. There's another team. A lot of the teams just, they're not going to their practice facilities, and I heard it was only, well, I read it was only for, well, it's random, right? Some of the teams are not going to be at their practice facilities for 3 days. I read another one that said it was going to be two. So I don't even know if they know, if they have a plan for this, if they had a contingency plan.
No, right now it's up to all the teams. Like also with when the season ostensibly opens, well, how many times can I use the word ostensibly in one show? It's got to be a record today.
Hey, ostensibly, any as much as
you want. Oh, okay, good. Well, as long as we've cleared that one up. I was worried about what it might look like. Okay, as long as they're plowing forward towards this April 24th opening date, basically they've basically said the teams, it's up to each team to decide on a fan protocol that will protect the fans.
Right.
Protect the fans.
April 24th.
Yeah, protect the fans while they're paying us money.
Yeah,
protect the fans so that they can pay us money. Oh, hold on. Did we just say that? Okay. Can we strike that from the record?
Is this thing on?
Exactly. Wait, so we can help the fans, because it's all about the fans.
Right. Well, I think April 24th is out, and once we start hearing other teams have infections, then it could get worse. I hope it gets better. I'm going to hope for the best, but think the worst. Let's move along. Let's go to fielding questions. So this is not really a question. This is, last week I asked you if you wanted to hear some more content. I know in Japan we really are not in a lockdown situation officially, although, like I said, soft lockdown here in Tokyo this weekend. I'm not even going to go, I'm going to stay the heck away from the gym, to be honest, but, because those seem to be petri dishes. But I asked you guys what you felt about us doing some content, and I said I didn't have a number in mind, but I wanted to get some responses. And really, if I was looking for a number, we didn't get the number of responses that I really would have hoped to get. But it only took one response for me to think, okay, we're doing a show. And I thought once Monday's announcement came down that they were going to cancel the practice game schedules and try to just get ready for the quote-unquote April 24th opener, I thought, well, we had to do a show just based on that. But I got a message, and it was a Facebook message, messenger from Pete in the Kansai region. I think he's in Osaka. And he says the following: you guys got to keep going. I can barely watch these silent games, and I watch camp every day, fall and spring. JBW makes my commutes a joy. Don't let those silent stadiums bring you down. Keep the podcast coming. So I got this, and I was totally moved. And then Tony Barnett, who was the guest on last week's show, chimed in on Twitter, and he said we should do shows. And then I got another email from another listener who said, keep doing the shows. And I was just so emotionally moved that I thought, well, we were going to do a show anyway, but thank you very much to Pete and to Tony and to Dragon Soul, because those guys really stepped up. Like I said, if it were just about numbers, I probably wouldn't have done
an NPP and say three people, forget it. That's not an economic number.
But the comments, I mean, even Tony on Twitter, the comments were just so touching that I just wanted to take the time to say thank you to those guys, because, you know, quite frankly, we don't get as much response as I would like. I mean, I try to, I know Jim says things that either could incite a riot or should incite a riot sometimes. And I say the same things, you know, about our opinions about baseball. I know I'm strong in terms of my opinions, and
well, I am, sir.
I don't listen to Jim's. That's how strong I am about my
opinions. Yeah, well, that's just being you. That's okay, because it's you. It's John being John. But I I'm the same way. I mean, I've had people, you know, guys stop me in the coffee shop and said, hey, we listen to the podcast. People on the street who recognize me and they say, we listen to the podcast. People at the winter meetings said, we listen to the podcast, and it's always a joy. So thank you all. And we are going to keep it going.
Definitely. We don't know how long it's going to be, but I know that we already have an interview for next week, so we can have a show next week. But you know, it's one of the reasons I wanted to invite the group of bloggers on to the show for the prediction specials, is because I know other people have opinions as well, and they know their teams really well, and they bring questions and comments and talking points to us that sometimes we don't think about because they know their teams so well. And I think when you're a fan of a team, or even just a fan of MPB, you have a different perspective. So it's necessary for us to get those new perspectives, or those deeper perspectives, or just a different perspective. Yeah. And I like statistical based talk. I like eye test talk. I like both sides. I don't necessarily want to do too much of either one, but I encourage you all listening to take some time and chime in. You can do it via email at yakyuhn@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast or on the Facebook page. And send us an MP3. I mean, we haven't gotten a lot of those recently, but send us a voice memo from your smartphone. It's very easy to do those. And you guys can control the conversation. And like I said before, you can talk about your team, and that gives us a chance to talk about your team in more depth. And we'd appreciate it, because we're not going to have very many games going on until the season, if the season gets going. So we'd love to hear from you. Please do that, and we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your lockdown
and see you all in good health.